Hello and welcome to Untalented by Unknown. Today I'm joined on my right by the first ever unknown, Molly Jennings, and the founder, editor-in-chief, creative director, overall legend, Dean George from Gaucho World. Dean, I'm not going to ask how you are, because I flip into that, and that is not how today is going to start. I'm going to ask you the question that we're going to start with every podcast, and that is, Dean George, who was the first person that ever made you feel like you had talent?
That's a really good question.
Thank you very much.
I feel as though the first person that ever made me feel like I have talent was my dad. And this is completely away from any sort of academics, but it's strictly in the world of sport. I remember I used to play cricket, believe it or not. And my dad was one of the best. He was amazing. And then I remember, he used to take me down to the park. I used to play with him. He was so hard on me. And I was like, I'm not good enough. Then I remember one day, it all just changed. And then, he was batting and I was bowling. And I got him out. And I was probably, 11 or 12. And I spent so much time trying to prove myself to my dad. I'm good. I listen to you when you speak. I want to get better. Then when I got him out, afterwards, he was like, you got me, son.
Wow.
I was like, thank you very much. And then a few years later, I stopped playing cricket.
That was I beat the big boss. Game over.
That's it, done. And then, but I had to choose between football and cricket, and everyone in my area was playing football. Understandably,
yeah,
no one was playing cricket in Hackney.
Wasn't a cool sport.
It wasn't a cool sport. So I was lonely, but I achieved my mission of getting my dad out once.
I'm quite jealous, actually. I played cricket with my granddad once. Well, no, when I was a kid, mm-hmm. And I had the opposite effect. He launched the cricket bat and said, "You're so bad, I'm not playing with you until you can hit the wickets." And I never played it again after that.
Don't get me wrong. I had gloves, bats, balls thrown at me by my dad, just being like, why aren't you getting better? But at the same time, it was all worth it, because to this day, I can get my arm over. I can hit the ball. I can field. I know that the ball's hard. I don't see a ball. And many kids from Hackney try to kick a cricket ball. but yeah, it was great, man. It was great.
And was that your childhood? You know, I guess, cricket's one thing, but was that how you felt growing up? Was there always a kind of need to impress your parents ahead of friends? Because some people kind of, mm-hmm. I guess, aren't formed that way.
100%. And I feel as though, everything, me as a being, is that was formed from my parents, obviously. Mm. But me as a character has been formed through myself, but my parents had massive influence in that. And I feel as though that debt that's owed to them, that invisible debt that's owed to them, you always think about, all right, cool. If I do this, how can they benefit as well? Mm. And there's sacrifices that parents make that you don't even begin to acknowledge or appreciate until you're so much older. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm at an age where I look back and I can say I never missed out on a school trip, never missed out on any opportunities with regards to the sports that I played, with regards to the activities I wanted to do. Again, going back to where I'm from, not many kids from Hackney can say they've been skiing multiple times. It's those small elements that make me appreciate my parents and want to impress them first instead of my peers.
Wow. When you were younger, what did your parents want you to be?
Oh my days. This is so funny. So, all right. So obviously my dad wanted me to be a cricketer.
That stopped at 14.
that's what it was. He wanted me to be a cricketer. My mum was obsessed with me becoming a physiotherapist, and so the NHS provide you with security in terms of your career. And I was like, all right, mum, I'll do it just for you. And then it got to a point where I was playing football. Football was going well. And I was like, yeah, I want to play football. I want to be a footballer. That's what I want to do. And then nothing happened to my knees, like that old, like that old story. But like, I just wasn't good enough to take it to the next step at the time. Like I was quite skinny at my age. Like I was technically great, but in terms of my physicality, I hadn't quite developed. But now, like,
yeah, I was gonna say, now you're fucking hench,
it's
mate.
Different now. It's Everton different are on the now. Phone, but it's too late. but yeah, I feel as though like physiotherapists from my mum and a cricketer.
So how that you're a creative director now, and you have your own magazine called Gaucho World. What on earth? So firstly, like, how did you convince your parents? Because there's a lot going on there. You've got a lot of faith from your dad. You've said to him, nah, I'm not doing cricket, which would have been a blow to the, you know, dagger to the heart.
He was hurt.
You then sort of decided to yourself that you want to be a football player. And then you've somehow gone from going, all right, mum, I'll do physiotherapy, to then going, right, I'm a creative director for a culture-led magazine and an agency. Boom. How did that happen?
Well, how did that happen? That's a really good question. It's more of a case of I was in a position where I was growing increasingly frustrated about where my life was heading. And with me, I don't live in the day. I always forecast. Mm. So where am I going to be in 6 months' time, 12 months' time, 5 years? I always ask myself that question, and I just didn't have any clarity. I didn't have a plan. And that really, really frustrated me. So I decided to use what is around me and celebrate my friends first and foremost. So Gaucho World started off as a platform to tell insightful stories about individuals in music, fashion and sport culture through a stylistic lens. So like, irrespective of you being an athlete, we won't show you in your sportswear or on your playing field. We'll take you into our world and showcase you as a human being first. And that just started off with friends. One of the first ever shoots we did was with my friend Randall Williams. He plays for Hull City at the moment, and he went from playing for Tower Hamlets, which is like the eighth or ninth tier of football, and then he went to Watford. And then his journey was just incredible, and now he's in the Championship. He's like a step away from the Premier League. And that was one of the first stories we ever told. And it was just stories similar to those, and me providing a platform for my friends to have their story heard. And it was just a case of not waiting for excellence to fall at someone's feet or them to become a household name. I believed in you. I want to tell your story because I know you're going to go places. Mm. And that element of storytelling is something that I've always been obsessed with. Like in school, like my favorite subjects and the ones that I excelled in the most was English literature and English language, where like I got double A in both subjects in my GCSEs. And I put the least effort into those classes because I just loved it so much. And I think that element of storytelling is something that I definitely wanted for my community and for the culture as well.
When you say, so Gaucho World is about telling stories of successful people that have come from your community, and some could be football players, some could be musicians, some could be in fashion, whatever. Who is it for and why does it exist?
It's for like-minded people. It's for individuals who feel as though that they're waiting for a space to be celebrated. It's for people who often feel that the only source of validation is from the likes of Face Magazine, Dazed, ID. You don't have to wait for those people to validate you. Gaucho World isn't just something that I made. It's something that everyone can embrace, and it's something that everyone can take something from. And for me, the most important thing about it is to ensure that it's a safe space as well. There's no, all right, cool, come back to us when you've got 100,000 streams. If your music's great, like, amazing. Like, we want to talk about that story because we believe that something will happen. And, like, one word that's banned at Gaucho World is the word emerging.
Emerging.
Emerging, like, it's not a word for me. It doesn't exist. If you're a music artist, you're simply a music artist. Don't add adjectives in front of it and call yourself an emerging music artist. No, you're a music artist. Because you take some of the biggest artists in the world, they started at the same point that you started. Would you call them an emerging artist when they were unknown? See what I did there?
Wow, thank you for that.
You're welcome. but it's just that case of, like, validity doesn't really exist. If you're good at something, you will be rewarded, and it's just all timing.
When somebody picks up Gaucho World and they put it back down again, what do you want that person to be walking away with?
There's two prongs to this. If it's Gaucho World isn't exclusively for individuals within our community, it's for people who have no idea as well. And the first prong is someone who picks it up who's involved in the community is like, that's my friend in a print publication. That's somebody that I celebrate and I listen to that the whole world have yet to experience. This is exciting. Wow. And then on the other side of the coin, people who aren't involved in the community is, who are these people? Mm. Why are they in the print magazine? I want to know more about these people. And if you want to know more about, if you leave wanting to know more about that person, I've done my job. I'm happy. I'm content. And it's a case where there's so many examples of where we've been the first to do things. And as a result of that, other things happen. And it's, for me, it's not, I don't care about money where this is concerned. It's that reward of, we did it first. Mm. And that's something that I'm proud of. I'm proud of saying that we are the tastemakers in our culture.
So you guys are going to be the first people that really see, I guess, unlock creative potential in people.
100%.
I feel.
I want to jump in there.
Yeah.
We don't unlock creative potential. We showcase creative potential.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why you guys? And how did that start? What was the kind of rubbing sticks moment where you were like, okay, this is what we're going to start?
If I'm honest, it was just a case of just being tired of the same things done the same way all the time. Footballer has a lot of character, but shoved into a world that he doesn't care about. Picture of him holding his boots up, thumbs up. That's not him. Like, that is not him. Like, who is the human being behind that individual? And we want to show that human being first and foremost. Without doing that, you're not going to understand him. And what you want to do is you want to create an authentic talent audience relationship at all times. And in creating a talent audience relationship, you create something that's so tangible that it becomes normal for people to be viewed in a different way.
Have you ever felt undervalued or like someone's holding you up to be something that you're not?
In the world of work or life?
Both.
In the world of work, I'd say yes and no. I'll start with no first. For example, like, all the work that I create and I'm involved in is an extension of myself, and often case, like, that's always appreciated. So I'll always feel appreciated in that respect. However, like, I'm not going to talk about personal experiences, but let's make up a scenario. So, for example, let's say that, I don't know, you've worked tirelessly for an agency and it gets to a point where the work you've created and the things you've done gets them an award. Mm. And imagine, like, not knowing that they've been awarded. Mm. Like they've been nominated for an award, they've been put forward for an award, and then you see a picture, and then the accountant's on stage, and you as the creative directors at home, and you find out why via a WhatsApp message. Like things like that, those are the kind of things that would make me feel undervalued. Not saying that's happened to
me,
but yeah, it's just things like that always play on my mind. And I'm like, if that were to happen to me, how would I respond?
Mm.
How would I deal with my feelings at that moment in time? And yeah, it's just really interesting to play about with it sometimes. But more often than not, I do feel valued.
And just like, what is work? Because obviously Gaucho World is mm-hmm. like, that's passion and work.
Yeah.
Work for you, the way I would describe it is mm-hmm. a creative director at an advertising agency,
mm-hmm.
essentially.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe it? Or actually, how would you describe your job, not Gaucho World,
mm-hmm.
to your mum?
I've tried. You see that question there? That is very frustrating because no matter how many times I explain it to my mum, she doesn't understand. She does not understand. But I love her. Love you, mum. But I would describe my job, bro. First and foremost, I'm a creative director and I'm a film director. I lead on creative projects, ensuring that we delve into the underbelly of all sorts of creative, ensuring that the output is of a high quality, answer the whys. That's very important. That's very important to my creative process, is you always have to ask why. Like, why are you doing this? Why has this brief come on our table? Why has the client come to us? Why do they want this particular piece of key messaging? Why? Always ask why, no matter what stage you're at. If you can't answer your whys, you're not going to land on a good creative.
What does bad creative look like?
Bad creative. I'm not going to give any examples of bad creative. But bad creative looks like a house built on sand.
Okay.
And there's no foundations, there's no stability, there's no core. And without a foundation, you can't really go anywhere. It's like trying to run on water. You two steps in, you're gonna fall, and if you can't swim, you're gonna drown.
Okay. Without being cryptic, give me like a granular. It hasn't got to be one that's happened, but like, can you make one up? An example of how? Because okay, I'll set some context. I see the output mm-hmm. of some really bad campaigns. I think mm-hmm. we've all seen some really awful campaigns, and we go, mm-hmm. how did that even get past the first review? Yeah. How does that happen? bad ideas come mm-hmm. to light?
I'll be completely honest with you. There's a massive obsession in our industry with clout culture. And let me rephrase that, actually, because this is another point I want to make. There's a massive problem in our industry with clout, and clout in itself isn't a bad thing. Like, you know, everybody loves a bit of clout, don't they? But agencies, brands, there's a very, very bad obsession with it. And for example, let's say a talent has 1 million followers and another talent has 100,000 followers. That individual with 100,000 followers could have less followers, but have a more saturated offering to the campaign, whilst the individual with 1 million followers may have more followers, but what is the value of that extra 900,000?
Mm.
And there's often a misconception of that value, and there's just a show of that number, and that prevents a lot of creative work from excelling. Because once you get the talent wrong, once you get that individual story wrong, you're just in a place where you're chasing numbers, not creative.
Mm.
And creative should always, always, always come first.
What happens if it doesn't?
If it doesn't come first, you you end up with something that's so obviously done for certain reasons.
Like what?
Like, all right, I'll give an example of a Cristiano Ronaldo campaign. I don't remember off the top of my head what agency done it or what it was for. That's how bad it was. If I can't remember the work you've done, it's crap. Like, I'm sorry. But it was Cristiano Ronaldo in a green screen promoting something like, what was it? It was, can I check it quickly?
I think it was toothpaste. I think I know.
It was something stupid.
Yeah.
It was something stupid. And it's like, he's in his football kit. It's Cristiano Ronaldo. And it's like, here's Cristiano Ronaldo. We've paid him X millions of pounds to be in this. He doesn't want to be here, but here he is, buy our product. That's literally what you've done. And you're telling the consumer that without even saying that's what you've done. It's so obvious.
That's bad influencer marketing, right?
It's bad.
Yeah. What's the antidote to that? So how do you get away from doing that kind of style advertising?
For me, you get away from that by asking yourself again, the whys, and taking it back to, all right, cool, what do you want to achieve here? And then through that, you should be able to answer your question in terms of talent ident, especially when you're relying on talent for certain campaigns. Like, your talent should be in line with your brand, not in line with your metrics.
Mm.
And that's very, very important. If that's why, like, Van Moof are doing so well.
Why?
Because their alignment is perfect. They know what their product is. Their product is amazing. They know the market they're trying to tap into. They know the key areas, the key cities they're trying to be. And what they're doing, they're going to each of these key cities and areas and tapping into the right people, the right creatives. And it doesn't just end at the talent. It's built into the directors they use, the art directors they use, even to the stylists they use. And you create that ecosystem of family. And once you've got that ecosystem of family with your brand, it's got legs.
Just for the listeners and me, what's Van Moof?
Oh, Van Moof is an electric bike.
Okay.
You've probably definitely seen it about. It looks so cool and futuristic.
They're so slick.
Yeah.
What do they do? What is it?
It's an electric bike. Like they originate from Amsterdam, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously being one of the biggest cycling cities in the world, but they've just tapped into the fact that it looks so slick and have really like built the brand off of the back of that, I think.
Okay.
Which is why it's been so successful almost.
And like one of their campaigns they did was super cool. This involved no talent, but they noticed that when they were delivering the bikes, a lot of damage was occurring to the bikes, and they made the packaging look like it was like a 50-inch TV, and they put the bike inside the TV box, and it was like handle with care, and it had a TV on the outside, and like but with the Van Moof bike logo on the side, and it's like the delivery drivers handled it with more care, and as a result, the amount of bikes damaged in transit reduced by a crazy amount.
Van Moof sounds really interesting. I think what you described there is essentially a really good advertising campaign, but done through culture and talent.
Yeah.
Advertising agencies, like old school ad agencies, what do you think of them?
Yeah. Old school ad agencies, personally, I love them.
Why?
Because they are the foundations of the industry. They are almost the avant-garde of creativity, advertising, just the industry. However, one thing I don't like about them, or if it gets to a case where it's like, all right, cool, we are who we are, we're not changing. Like, I don't want him to become my dad. Literally, my dad, I love him to pieces, but he's getting old. He's getting miserable. He's so stuck in his ways. But he's like one of the best people in the world. But he's so stuck in his ways. And
terrible at cricket.
I can't. Dad, you're amazing, Dad. I'm not going to let him do this to you. But, for example, my dad is still unbelievably talented as a human being away from cricket as well. And it's like my mum my sister and myself would always say, Dad, why don't you do this? You could do this. And he's like, nope, I'm not doing it. And like, if ad agencies, there are ad agencies that have the same mindset and they just churn out the same things over and over and over again. And it's that saying of, if it's broke, don't fix it. Mm. But if it's not broke, don't fix it. But for me, is if it's not broken, like, how can you make it even stronger?
Mm.
And I feel as though thinking like that on the foundations that you already have, that's when you become a powerhouse.
What do you think? I think a lot of agencies are definitely like ready to change.
Mm-hmm.
What we tend to see is they bring in people like you,
mm-hmm.
and they go, right, okay, this guy understands culture. He understands like how TikTok mm-hmm. works.
Mm-hmm.
Off you go. And then what you typically find is you go in and you go, wow, these guys are really slow. They're working a very different way to how I work.
Mm-hmm.
And normally someone will last about 2 months and go, fuck this for a bag of spanners. I'm out mm-hmm. of here. I'm going back to a content creation agency where it's quicker.
Yeah.
That's been going on for 5 years, right?
Yeah.
People go in and it's the wrong, they've brought in somebody that's just basically too quick, too cultural, too like different thinking.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, like if you were to give advice to an ad agency that wanted to change, wanted to hire somebody that had come from a more interesting background, how do you think they could keep someone like you in their agency?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a case of ensuring that as an agency, you know what you want for yourself, first and foremost. If you want that culture and new identity to trickle through your entire agency, or do you want just a little section of your agency to be populated? I think that clarity is very, very important. It's like you can't cut down a tree and leave the roots.
Mm.
It'll just grow back, you know? It's like you've got to get into the roots and implement your culture at the core of things, and then things will change, you know?
Mm.
And it's very important that as an agency, your intentions are super clear, because you don't want to be told one thing and then, for example, your CEO wants one thing and then your brand manager wants something else, then your designer wants something else, the creative team are not aligned with you. If everyone's just pulling in different directions, there's not going to be forward steps.
What should agencies that want to retain good cultural thinkers not do if they want to keep you?
That's a really good question. I think the most important thing is to understand the person that you have. And there's no point like positioning the individual on things that they're not aligned with and doesn't make sense for them. Don't get me wrong, as a creative, there've been multiple times where I've adapted and excelled. And I think that's very important for any creative to be able to come in with a different hat and make something that's not as good, brilliant. That saying of, you can't polish a turd. Mm. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Like, you can make some very bad stuff look great. However, there needs to be that balance of, all right, cool. You've worked on something. We know that wasn't quite aligned to you. You smashed it. Let's make sure we get in some other stuff that like tickles your palate and makes you happy as a creative. Because I think that's very important. Like, a creative is a creative, first and foremost. It shouldn't be constantly adapting to the ways of an agency. It should be a nice balance between the two.
I want to focus a little bit on your work, because you've mm-hmm. made some stuff that you're proud of. And I saw one thing that you sent me. I was like, fucking hell, that is actually really cool. And sometimes in these conversations, you can get a little bit,
mm-hmm.
you can always be quite conceptual and you can mm-hmm. like speak about the ideas of things. Can you tell me about, it doesn't have to be that piece of work, but it can be if you want. Tell me about a piece of work that you've created that you've gone, that is the shit that I'm proud of making.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's definitely like that first series with EA Sports. That's probably what I'm the most proud of.
What was it?
It was a series that they did for FIFA 22, I think it was, okay. Or 21, one of them. And then it was called Winners One. That was the series. It was EA Sports Presents Winners One, featuring, it was a two-part series featuring Phil Foden and Trent Alexander-Arnold. Did it with 10 Toes Media, where I was the creative director. I creative directed both films and film directed them. And the reason why I loved those projects so much was because footballers were just constantly being shown in the same light, time after time after time. And I was sick of it. And with this brief, there was an opportunity to make something different. And what we got was so left of the brief, because I said, you know what, I'm going to pitch this and they're going to love it. Like, I said that to myself, they're going to love it. I sat down, I spent weeks writing those scripts, building out the creative. And the opening shot of the Phil Foden one and the opening shot of the Trent one are probably like two of my favourite shots I've ever done in any piece of work.
Why?
Because the first shot, Phil Foden one, I wanted to have Phil Foden hold his son on like a little molehill on the road that he used to play football. His grandma used to live on this road. He used to play football on the road, and there's like a little molehill at the end of the road. And it's like, for me, the first thing that came to my mind was The Lion King, when what's Simba's dad's call again?
It's not Scar.
Mufasa. Yeah, it is, yeah, Mufasa. Yeah. Mufasa. I thought Mufasa was the evil one, but that's Scar. Scar's evil. Yeah. Mufasa and Simba, like, they're sat and he's showing him the land, and he's like, this is all yours, but like, don't go over there. And it's like, I wanted to recreate that, where it's like Phil Foden's holding his son on that little molehill, showing him the roads that he started to play football on. And then we zoomed into Phil Foden's son's eyes, and then we like cut to a group of kids playing football on the street.
Wow.
And on top of that, we had Phil Foden's mum talking about when she knew that he had something special and how people used to talk about him. So we've got Phil Foden, his son, and his mum all within like a 20-second window.
Wow, that's proper storytelling.
And that is proper storytelling. And the easy and obvious thing to do, here's Phil Foden. But nah, that wasn't good enough.
He wasn't dangling any boots.
Nah, no dangling any boots or anything. That was like...
That sounds awesome.
Pretty special. And the Trent one, I'll talk about it quickly. It was, again, the local area where Trent grew up. We casted a kid that looked like a young Trent. And we asked Trent to bring his Premier League and Champions League winners' medals. And we had the kid wearing the medals for the opening shot. And then, so the medals technically weren't there. There were figures of his imagination as a child as to what he wanted to achieve in his career. And as we zoomed in, we matched cut to Trent being stood in the same spot. So it was little Trent, big Trent.
Oh,
straight away. And then the medals were still there. So it's almost like the dreams of him as a child wanting to win those medals became a reality. And then we had his mum, went to his mum's house, and I like, had a lovely chat with her. And the voiceover was talking about when Liverpool won the Champions League. And I think, I'm not a Liverpool fan, so it doesn't matter. I think it was 2004. And then, like, she was saying that Trent was, like, in the road with her, looking at the bus, and was like, "Mummy, like, one day I'm going to be on that bus."
Wow.
And that was the voiceover over that section.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I love that. Again, proper storytelling, right?
100%.
What do you hate about this industry?
That's a good question. There's so much that... Hate is a strong word.
Right, what fucks you off about? Right, okay, you're sitting there, your laptop's there, and then boom, boom, you get like a G-chat or Slack or a thing, and it's a brief, and you're like, what is that? What does that brief look like?
I dislike being average.
Okay.
I dislike that satisfaction of that will do. Oh, we'll do this with that will do. I hate that. And like I said earlier, a turd can be polished.
Mm.
Don't have that will do mindset. How can you make this excellent? Like, all right, all the boxes are ticked. Make some more boxes. Why not? It's your name that's getting associated with it. And there's an obsession with that will do mindset that creates work. That's just like, the more rubbish work that's put out makes it harder to see good work.
Mm.
However, it makes good work stand out more. But it's like, for me, there shouldn't be that disparity. It should be, all right, how can we make the quality of creative higher altogether? It shouldn't be a case of bad creative, good creative. It should be, all right, average, good, excellent. It shouldn't be rubbish, a little bit rubbish. It's that spectrum, and it should only be grey or green. It shouldn't be red.
Okay, grey or green?
Grey or green.
What do you think when brands brief you and they say, we want to do a TikTok, or we want to do something that's like culturally on trend right now?
First and foremost, I do not have anything against TikTok. I have a problem with TikTok becoming a buzzword. And it's a lot of the brands, they don't even know what they want, but they're in love with the algorithm. They're in love with the fact that you can post something and it'll pick up traction just like that. Who wouldn't? It's normal, part and parcel of the business. But what's stopping you from still creating great work on there? Like, if TikTok is a platform that can make a piece of creative excel, by all means, use it, exploit it. However, if it's a case of you're just adding TikTok in as part of a package for saying, oh, we can do it, why are you doing it?
Moles, you're a TikTok person.
Yes.
Do you ever watch a brand thing, or does any of that seep through, or do you just get otters the whole time?
Mainly otters. There are some brand things on there, but it's rare that there's a brand thing that will catch your eye.
Really?
I think Mulberry recently did some TikTok campaigns for their new like cloud bag or cloud line, and I saw those and thought they were really beautiful and really well executed, but the majority of it you just skip past because it's not relevant. It's like Dean was saying, it's just plugged into there for the sake of adding TikTok to a campaign.
Yeah.
Rather than them sitting back and thinking, why, who, and like, how do we make this the most digestible it can be and the most natural?
Mm-hmm.
Because if something doesn't engage you within 5 seconds, not even 5 seconds, 2 seconds,
you're off.
You just scroll straight past it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't see much of it, but that's probably because I'm just blind to it because I scroll.
You're there for otters.
I just want the otters.
But that's what I mean. Like, you're on this TikTok thing. It is like second for second the most entertaining thing that is out there in the world. I believe it's more exciting than a film, than an action film. You're like, whoa, like every scroll.
Mm-hmm.
How the fuck is a brand? Do you then interrupt that, like, and go, oh, don't forget us. Mm-hmm. Like, look at our little handbag.
Yeah, well, I think, like, the Mulberry ones, worked for me because I love handbags. Like, and like that obviously helps, but it's that relevancy, or just the way it was shot was really beautiful. But yeah, like if I'm going on TikTok, I want to go on and laugh at something and laugh at funny videos. I don't want to have like being, I don't want to be sold something consistently that I don't want. Unless it's a shiny handbag or an otter.
Shiny though, otter handbag? Fine. No, too far. Too far.
No.
Not for the vegans.
Not for the vegans as well. Shiny otter bag.
Dude, I just want to go back. Sorry, I'm diving back into you for a second. If we haven't really spoken about access and kind of people getting into this industry. Obviously, what you're doing with Gaucho World is amazing in terms of showcasing people. But if you were to have a conversation with an 18-year-old person trying to get into the industry right now, what would you say? Because like, there could be a few routes in, right? They could become a TikTok creator. They could join an ad agency writing ads for yogurt. Or they could go to a media company, perhaps, where they're not valued as a creative person. What would you say to them, and what would you recommend that an 18-year-old dude getting into this industry does?
I'd say don't look to anyone or don't rely on anyone. It's a case of, I'm not gonna lie, there's many people that have played a massive, massive role in my career. However, at the same time, you just have to be fearless. You have to be fearless. If you believe in something, use what's around you. Like, use your friends. Even if they don't understand it, make them reshare it. Make them celebrate your work. It starts at home. And once you can create that talkability around yourself, people will hear about you. If you're doing the right things, people will come knocking. Like, I've never like had a CV. Because at the end of the day, the work in itself speaks volumes. It's do things, fail, do it. Failing is succeeding. Because every time you fail, you ask yourself, why? Back to my point of always asking why. Yeah. Like, why have I failed? Okay, you address it, you correct it, you fail again, more mistakes come up. Like, maybe sometimes your failures are that big, sometimes they're that big. But as long as overall there's that overall reduction in your failures, it's fine.
And in a second, we're going to move on to crown paint. Before we do that, I want you to look into that lens right there, right? And you have one sentence to tell an 18-year-old creative person what they should do entering the world of creative. What should they do to the camera? Bam.
18-year-old creative, stop thinking, start doing. Get it out your notes. Get it into the world.
Yes. Thank you. Speaking about things out in the world, there is a crown paint ad.
Yeah.
It has caused chaos. I've watched it once. I watched it twice. I watched it a third time and I couldn't work out what was wrong. Someone just sent me the video and I was like, okay, right, there's a video. Everyone's talking about it. I didn't read any of the comments, right? Mm. I just saw a crown paint ad and I just saw the word misogyny. I watched it three times.
Yeah.
I have to be honest, I didn't pick up the misogyny straight away. Mm. I'm going to start with you, Moles.
I knew.
Crown paint ads. What did you think?
I personally didn't like it. I didn't think it was quite as bad as the world has made it out to be. However, I think that the way the script and how it was presented was just a little bit tasteless.
Why?
I think I probably overthought it because of obviously like the clout of how bad it had been, but it was just the linking, we met at a rave, is the baby mine? It was that connection for me that I just thought, why did that have to be made? I mean, if they've made it just to create the noise, then fair play, they've done well. They've pissed a lot of people off, but they've done well. But I think it was that sort of connection that I just didn't like. And I felt it was unnecessary to make that comment.
What do you think that says about women in a bad way?
I think it's something that it's not necessarily painting a picture of the woman in a bad way. I think it's the conversation that it's being aired to the public, to everyone, in a bad way. Like, I think that those types of conversations are ones that you should keep between yourself and the person that you're with, or yourself and your close family and friends. It's not a concern to be aired like that, because that is when women are then painted in a bad way.
I get that. Is it advertising and the brands that advertise, is it on them to paint what the world should look like? Or should we allow foibles? Should we allow slurs like that, like the crown paint slur? Is that just not what life is like? Or is it on the brand and on the advertiser's responsibility to paint everything perfectly and not offend anybody?
I think however you paint something, you're going to offend someone. If you paint it that it's all rainbows and otters and unicorns, some will be offended. If you paint it that it's harsh reality, some will be offended. I think it was just, it's more in the language and it's more in the scripts. Like, that's why you have creatives, that's why you have talented writers, to be able to understand and deliver the nuances of these real life but potentially slightly tricky situations in a better way. I think that they could have just improved on that element of it, rather than how they did deliver it.
Dean, what do you think? Did you watch it and go, well, that's really offended me?
Yeah. Not really, but at the same time, I can understand why it did. Because me as a creative, first and foremost, like, I think something that's super, super important is that you don't get consumed with being a creative. First and foremost, you're a human being first, a creative second. And within the industry, people, when they put the creative hat on, they forget about being a human being. And when you start doing that, that's when you start getting into a spot where, all right, cool, you could start saying things for a reaction. And I think it was done to create a reaction, but it sparked,
like, the wrong one?
The wrong one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you think they wrote that script in so people would be like, whoa, but yeah, not like, they were like, whoa!
Yeah.
Not too bad.
They were like, yeah, I'm being creative. that's literally, they were like, yes.
Really? They think that's what was going on?
100%.
I think they saw it as like a risque thing would, like, that would get them on the map. Maybe I had no idea who they were, I'm not going to lie. So it was like a risque thing, like, oh yeah, this will get us on the map, this will get people talking. Yeah. But actually they're probably now like, oh God, that got us on the map too hard and too fast in a way that we didn't want.
Where is the sexism, do you think?
I think it goes back to what I said before, is that it's allowing a male voice to vocalize to a massive audience something such as that, which is already seen as taboo. And it's, to them, it's a joke. Oh, I hope it's mine. Whereas if a woman said that to her friends, her families, whoever, it would be like, oh my God, I hope it's mine, I'm terrified. Mm. Whereas to him, it was like a laugh and a joke, and that's how they've tried to play it in the advert. Yeah. Whereas they're not seeing it through the female lens of, they're just not shining a light on the female lens and the female of how they would be feeling in that moment. Mm-hmm. Even if, like, she or the person was to think that their partner was thinking in that way about them, they're not even shining a light on that. Mm. And it's just that dominant male voice of, haha, everything's a laugh and a game, I don't have to worry, type of thing.
So a little bit of lack of responsibility there.
Yeah.
All right, I'll accept that. I'm, do you know what? Because I was gonna challenge on that and say, has advertising lost its... Can you be funny in advertising? Can you offend people in advertising now and get away with it without causing cancellation of brand, Twitter hysteria, people at your door with fucking pitchforks? Have you seen, like, has anybody seen an ad where it's like, oh, that might fuck them off, but I reckon they'll be all right with that?
I think it's the way that you are funny. If you're being sexist, it's not funny. If you're gonna annoy someone on, like, a surface level that it might just rub someone off the wrong way, up the wrong way, fine. If you're gonna do something that's super granular and gonna actually affect those people more deeply or cause them to like reflect on things that have happened to them or may happen to them or have happened to loved ones, that's not funny.
No.
It's how you would be funny with your friends. I think is how advertising should be seeing a humor element.
It's fucking dangerous, to be honest. Yeah. Suddenly, when you said being funny to your friends, I was like, no, that's not funny. all right, that was Crown Paint. The other thing I wanted to speak about, I don't know if you guys know, Dean, this might be a little bit out of your world, but there's a company called Pollen. What are Pollen? How would you describe Pollen?
They are a music and technology app.
Like an experiences kind of thing.
Yeah, they kind of marry all of it together with experiences.
They raised $150 million, mm-hmm. right? So this is a big company, right? They've hired a ton of people, mm-hmm. and then out of nowhere, the CEO writes a message to everyone. There's this, like a news thing flying around and everyone's going, Pollen's going under. The CEO sends a message out and says, nah, that's a lie. 4 hours later, dissolves the company. So you suddenly have people that thought they had jobs 4 hours later, completely made redundant packages. And I know, right? So two questions. Number one, this fucking crazy tech world where people hire en masse, mm-hmm. is it fair? Like, is it fair to get everyone to buy into a vision and then suddenly, on the flip of a coin, just cut everyone and their lives just changed that morning? Is that fair?
That's crazy.
Is it to be expected for joining a high risk start? I'm trying to play devil's advocate on the other side.
I think it's one of those like life old questions have been like, is life fair? Mm. Like everything in life is a risk. You never know whether it's going to pay off. And I think that Pollen have grown and hired all these people in with the vision and the view that these people are going to be successful and be at Pollen for a long time. It's such sad news that they've gone under. No one was going to forecast that. No one knew. So mm-hmm. I think it is fair because they hired everyone with the right intentions and it was a risk that everyone takes. You take a risk when you do anything. You take a risk crossing the road. You mm-hmm. take a risk getting a new job. So I think that element of it is fair. I think how he executed it mm-hmm. and saying, no, you're all safe, ghosting and then dissolving, that's not fair. So there's kind of... I don't think that it was unfair for them to grow and to build and to have all these people invested in them.
I just worry. I think that someone knows. I genuinely think that, okay, the rest of the company probably can't forecast that, but a CEO is in charge of signing off hires and there must be a moment where they're going, I can't really see us lasting much longer than 3 months, let alone a day, right? And there would have been hires that were signed off like the week before, months before, and the visibility would have been clear that money wouldn't have been coming into that company. Mm-hmm. People would have left jobs. They would have had 3 month notice periods in. Mm-hmm. They would have got mortgages approved on their new salary. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we're like, oh, it's tech, and we're shrugging it off, just like, you know, that's the risk that you sign up to. Mm-hmm. Or if we're actually going, should these people be held a little bit more accountable mm-hmm. to that?
Definitely, I think so. And it's a case of transparency where redundancy is a thing should always be placed as a high priority. Is why am I being made redundant? What is the status of your next move? Like, is there anything we could do as a company to stop us from going on? The answer to that is off the case, no, but like, it's worth a conversation.
But
for me, when things like that happen, it just highlights like cowardly behavior. And if you're a coward in this industry, you're not a leader.
Fair enough.
Like, mm-hmm. cowards can't be leaders at all.
I'm gonna get that tattooed on my face.
Yeah.
And Dean George 2022 underneath. Hi, I know what you're thinking. Who's this? It's me. It's going to be a very quick interruption. Please, would you mind giving us a review on Spotify? Just 5 delicate stars, you legend. Go on, do what's right on Apple. Not on Spotify, on Apple, you little legend. Or both, whatever you fancy. So I want to speak about the elephant in the room. Right now, we've asked our wonderful, handsome guest, Dean George of Gaucho World, creator, director, mastermind. What is your elephant in the room?
My elephant in the room is something that's like, it's not really an elephant, but a lot of people don't like talking about it. And it's like people who don't play their position. and how that affects everything else. For example, if you are a creative director, be a creative director. If you are a brand manager, be a brand manager. Brand managers shouldn't try and be creative directors.
Why not? It
doesn't work like that, because then you're encroaching in their space. Like, if it were to happen the other way, it would be the same thing. You'll be encroaching onto their space. So it's a case of, all right, yeah, teamwork makes the dream work.
Mm.
However, defenders need to defend. Strikers need to score goals. If defenders are up trying to score all the goals, you're getting in the striker's way. Like, and at the end of the day, goals win matches. And you don't want to ever be in a position where you're at war internally, going back and forth on things that at the end of the day, the client should be making certain decisions.
Mm.
Bring it to the client. Let them be the independent, what's it? The independent
adjudicator.
That's the word.
Adjudicator.
That's the word. That's the word.
I've always wanted to say adjudicator.
And it's like, yeah, it's just too much of that for me. And
so you're saying stay in your lane, get good at it.
Stay in your lane.
What they need to do.
Get mm-hmm. good. Just stay in your lane. Get good at it.
Like, wow. Thank you.
Yeah.
When do you think it's gone wrong when someone has encroached and not stayed in their lane?
I need to be careful with this one. I can't speak on personal experiences, but I could like give you an example of a scenario that may happen. For example, a pitch comes in, a CD is working on the pitch with their creative team, and the brand manager, you have a meeting with your brand manager, and they're like, no, this doesn't make sense. It doesn't work.
On what basis?
On what basis?
Or just like, nah, I'm not having that.
Exactly. Like, how are you, like, what gives you the right? Yeah. What makes you so right? What makes you so right? There's no harm in accepting that you may be wrong sometimes. You're not right in this instance.
Mm.
Like, same on the reverse. The creative director might not be right. However, it's a case of going through the right processes and the right protocols.
Take it to the adjudicator.
Exactly.
I think it's like the element of being able to see what you excel at and what you don't excel at, and allowing others the space to do things better than you would do. Yeah. I think that there's a lot of people that can't do that because they have to be right at everything. They have to be the overpowering voice, when actually maybe I'm not the best person to come up with this idea or the best person to run with this. I'm going to stand back and let you do it, because that's what your job is. That's what your lane is.
Mm.
And I think that sometimes things get crowded and people always want to be the overpowering voice, and people always want to be the best. And that's when it can get sticky.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because you're part of SMT, or you have a certain job description, it doesn't mean like you need to talk about everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that everything you say is gospel. And it's that thing of, all right, as a brand, like, they're the most important. If you're working with a brand, they're the most important thing. Get the egos out of the room, man.
Mm-hmm.
Get it out. Like, let the brand make executive decisions.
Love that. Molly Jennings, before we go, Dean, that was fantastic. Thank you. Stay in your lane. Stay in your f***ing lane, all right? Particularly you little dirty manager. So, right, before we go, Molly, I feel like you've got to have an elephant in the room, because it's going to be a while till you're back in this room. It's October until you're back in here, which is only really a month into it. What's your elephant? Is it here? Am I the elephant?
It's you. It's the fact I don't have an otter. What is my elephant? I think my elephant in the room for the industry is the just like works for work's sake. What is the point?
Wow.
What is the point in making work for work's sake? Like, I get it. Some ads just need to be churned out and things need to be made. But it's kind of going back to what you were saying earlier, Dean. Why not just make everything the best it can be. Why are people just making work for work's sake? It's done. It's okay. We can run with it. Like, why is everything not the best craft it can be? And why are the creatives working on it not proud of it? Like, why? Why is there the need for that? I think you that's my elephant.
No more f***ing work for work's sake. I'm enjoying this angry little Vinnie Jones bit that I've got in here. Molly said, don't make bad, terrible work for no one. Signing out.